When I was a teenager, I was in a conservative Southern Baptist church, and someone gave me a book called The Late Great Planet Earth. It was a very popular book at the time, and certainly all of those around me really bought into what the book had to say. And basically, the author went through the Bible and cut out little snippets of the Bible, some verses, and then kind of glued them together with other verses to create this prediction of what the future was going to be like. And that was not an original work. He took from other sources, but he managed to capture the sort of the energy of the times around that. And so there was just a lot of energy. A couple of other authors wrote a whole long series of novels depicting all of the stuff that was going to happen. And basically, you probably know a little bit about it. It has things like the rapture in it. The rapture is when good people, faithful people, are going to be sort of taken out of the problems of the world and taken straight up into heaven, and then it'll be happy and glorious for them, but really bad for everybody else, because they're going to be stuck down here, and there's going to be wars and famine and disease and all sorts of terrible things, and that's going to go on for a while until there's this giant war, which is going to end the world, more or less, and then Jesus comes in at the last minute and sets everything straight and creates this peaceful realm that will go on for 1,000 years or more. It's a very captivating idea of, you know what the future is going to look like, and it's going to work out well for you because you believe in Jesus. I'm a different kind of Christian these days, and I see that use of the Bible as not only improper, but it's based on a misunderstanding of the very nature of God. The Bible is not a crystal ball. It isn't some mystical, magical book that predicts the future. Now, we say that in the context of today's reading, where it sounds like Jesus is predicting the future. Bad times are coming, Jesus says. Really bad times. So bad it's going to feel as if the heavens themselves are shaken. But Jesus wasn't talking about something happening 2,000, 3,000 years in the future. Jesus was talking about something that was right on the horizon, something that he could see coming. You didn't have to have a crystal ball to know how things were going, to know what would happen if things continued to go in the direction they were going. Jesus was talking about really hard times coming, but coming in just a few years. And indeed, about 30-some years after Jesus died, the frustration of the people of Israel, having been exploited by the Roman Empire for so long and having Rome take everything from them, take their hopes for the future, take their dreams for their children away, the people of Israel were so frustrated that they rose up violently against the Roman Empire, and a war broke out, and Rome decided that it wanted to show the world what happens to somebody who stands up against Rome, and so they used very heavy-handed tactics in Israel at the time. They burned villages, they killed people, they crucified people, they took many people as slaves. Undoubtedly, if you were standing in the midst of a village that was burning down around you and you saw the people you know dying and other people missing and being taken away as slaves, it would have felt like the end of the world. It would have felt as if the heavens themselves were shaken. Just 35 years or so after Jesus died, it was in Jesus' future. But this passage is written by Luke, and those events of that war were about 15, 20 years in Luke's past. So it had already happened by the time Luke wrote this stuff down. But Luke was writing for his people as well. And those people, us included, those people were facing hard times as well. You didn't have to have a crystal ball in Luke's age either to know that that first rebellion didn't resolve the issues, and that there were still people who were very upset in Israel and who were willing to die for a better way of life. And about, 45 years, 50 years after Luke's writing down of this gospel, there was another rebellion against Rome. And Rome used even heavier-handed tactics against the people who participated in that rebellion. And again, it would have probably felt as if the world was ending. This isn't in the Bible to predict the future. This is in the Bible to charge the people who are faithful with a particular task in hard times. Hard times are coming, Jesus says. Luke says, through Jesus, hard times are coming. And in such times, having hope takes effort. It doesn't come easy. In such times, you have to really work to dig out the hope that is there, but hard to find. And we're talking about real hope. We're not talking about false hope. We're talking about real hope. It's an act of faith to even and hope to even start looking for hope, to even go through the effort. So it's a challenge for most people, people who have no faith, of beyond something that they can see. It's a real challenge for people to do the hard work of digging out hope. But that's what Jesus charges people to do, to be ready. When bad times come, be ready. Not to give up, but to dig deep, to find the hope that will continue to sustain the possibility of a better time to come. Jesus and Luke put so much effort into this idea of hope because hope is the precursor to change. We're never going to change anything in the world unless we believe that things in the world can change. We take the effort to get down that road because we believe we can make it to the place of peace and hope. Hope is real power. It is real power for change. Those people who are happy with the way things are, who are profiting from the way things are, they see hope as a threat. Because once you start to hope for a better world, then you make this world, the way things are in this particular setup, less sure. With hope comes the possibility that things could be different. I believe this is an important message for now. It's easy to lose hope. A lot of people were overwhelmed at the last presidential election, and I think lost some hope. I can imagine the people in Paradise, California, standing there and watching their town burn down around them as the forest fire surrounded them, not knowing what was happening to their neighbors, not knowing what was happening to the ones they love, seeing everything that they know burning down. I imagine it felt like the very heavens were shaken, that it was the end of the world. This week, the government put out a report and said that the predicted lifespan of a person in the United States has declined again. Our lifespan as a nation of people is getting shorter rather than longer. This is the longest series of decline in the lifespan of the people of this country since about 100 years ago. You have to go way back to like 1915 to find that much decline as we're experiencing now. And in those years, back then, we had a little thing called World War I happen. And we had something that is kind of forgotten in history, but this terrible pandemic flu that swept the nation and killed over 600,000 people. Our lifespans are decreasing because certain sectors of our nation are not living as long, not predicted to live as long, are dying sooner, especially among younger people. Young adults are dying from two major causes. One is death from drug overdose. The other is death from suicide. These aren't diseases. This isn't a war. These are deaths caused by hopelessness. These are deaths created by a sense that the future has nothing for you. Our lives as a nation are getting shorter because we can't see the hope. And hopelessness takes other forms than drug addiction and suicide. It takes the form of rage. It takes the form of increased levels of hatred towards scapegoat groups. You know that something's wrong in the world and you want to blame somebody, so you pick somebody to blame. Maybe it's people who have a different skin color. Maybe it's people who have a different religion. Maybe it's people who have a different sexual orientation. But somebody has to be responsible for your lack of hope. I've seen, too, in this nation, although there are continue to be many good things that pop up and happen, that there is this sense of this closing down of the sense of future for this country. We've moved from being a nation that thought that they could make the world a better place to being a nation that thinks that it has to lock itself in behind walls in order to protect what we have against the needs of the world. It's called lifeboat ethics. The idea is you're in a lifeboat and you're secure, but there's all sorts of people floating out in the water who want to get into your lifeboat. And if you let them all into your boat, the boat's going to sink and all of you are going to drown. So best keep those people out of your boat so at least you'll live. We've become a nation guided by lifeboat ethics. And lifeboat ethics is an ethic of despair. Hard times are coming. You don't need a crystal ball to see it. We saw it in the fires in California. We saw it in the hurricanes. We see it across the world in droughts and forced mass migration. And as global warming gets worse and worse, all of those things are going to get worse and worse. And the damage and the despair are going to continue to rise. And instead of having tens of thousands on our borders trying to get in, there's going to be tens of millions trying to get into Europe and North America. The future, if we continue as we're going, looks grim. Now, I know that since we're closing in on the Christmas season, this doesn't sound like good Christmas messaging. And why did we start Advent with a scripture that's talking about all this gloom and doom? Because the first Sunday of Advent is always about hope. And it's about real hope. It's not about the fake hope that God is going to float in on a cloud and save us at the last moment. It's not about fake hope that some genius is going to invent some carbon-sucking device and save us at the last moment. It's not about some billionaire who's going to come up with a way of doing a new app on everybody's telephone and is going to end homelessness. It's not about simple solutions to difficult problems. It's about looking straight at those terrible, terrible, painful, difficult problems now and the ones that are coming down the line at us very quickly and saying, yes, I understand. It's difficult. It's hard. It's going to cost a lot to pull this train off the rails. But if we don't do it, even worse is going to come. Real hope, the hope you have to dig for, is the hope that looks at what's wrong in the world and say, we can still do this. We can be better people. We don't need God riding in on a cloud. We need God rising up inside of us. We are more than the sum of the parts. Life is more than the sum of all the critters walking around on this planet. The universe is more than all the stuff floating around in space. Human beings are more than our abilities and our resources. There is a spirit flowing through life. There is a spirit flowing through the universe. There is a spirit inside of us that can transform our lives and our world. We can do amazing things, but we have to have hope. This text is about charging us to do the hard work of digging down and finding that hope and living in the light of that hope. And by so living, be hope for others. That's the Christmas message. Hope is real, but hope is among us. God with us. That's what Emmanuel means. We are the hope with God. We are the good news.